Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Huff Takes. This is episode 3. I'm Eric Geller.
I'm Grace Seegers.
And I'm Haley Bird-Wilt.
And we've got a great topic for this episode. We're going to talk about one of my favorite Star Wars movies. I'll let Grace and Haley speak for themselves. Episode 7, The Force Awakens, the start of the sequel trilogy, the start of a new era of Star Wars storytelling, and, well, the start of an era of very controversial story decisions by Walt Disney Company et al. We're going to talk about what we loved, what we didn't necessarily like, how it connects to the next two movies in the trilogy, and just kind of give you our sense of this film. We've got a very light structure here. We're going to sort of go by themes. And we're going to start with the characters because obviously one of the biggest draws of this movie is that it does bring us a host of great new characters who, you know, really breathe life into this trilogy and into the saga as a whole. Certainly one of my favorite parts is this new trio that we meet. But I'd like to hand things over to Haley since before we were talking, and I know that this is you're super excited to talk about this movie. Do you have a favorite new character from this movie?
Yeah, so I love all three of them, and I thought that I loved them all equally. But I was watching it again, and I was taking notes about what I appreciated about all of their relationships, and I found myself writing over and over again, I love Finn's relationship with Poe. Like, I love how Finn interacts with Rey. And I wrote, I love how Finn interacts with Han. And it's like, oh, like, maybe my favorite character is just Finn. And he's just great. So it's probably Finn for me. And I think just seeing, you know, behind the scenes and being a stormtrooper and how that worked out for him was really interesting. And yeah, he's probably my favorite.
I do love Finn. And honestly, like, I'll just say, you know, my favorite is Rey, and I just absolutely love her in this movie. She's fantastic. Daisy Ridley, you know, is just superb in this film. And remembering that, because I never forgot how much I loved her in this movie, but remembering that made me forget how great Finn is. And Poe as well, but there's just something about John Boyega in this movie that just, you can't not love him. I mean, he's just so wonderful. John, who by the way, I don't even know if I knew that he was, like, British before I first heard his voice, which I think was probably in the first, not the teaser trailer, but the actual first trailer. I don't really remember when I found out that he was British, but, like, I will say this for his American accent. It's pretty good. It's not bad.
It is pretty good. I noticed there were a couple of words that were, like, he had to try really hard to say that.
He says Falcon.
Native dialect. Yeah.
It's the Falcon. This is America, Star Wars.
But you know what? Han says Falcon, so.
Yeah, but that's Harrison Ford being weird.
True. The eternal excuse for Harrison Ford.
Truly, truly. I will jump in here and say that Finn, I think, also is my favorite character. I just rewatched it this afternoon with fresh eyes. It had been a couple of years since I had seen it. And when it first came out in 2015, I was 20. Yes, I was 20 years old. And I was studying abroad in London and alone and not having a great time. And I saw this movie on opening night by myself. And I just remember being blown away by how cool Rey was and how wonderful and how just in every single way amazing. And so for years, I thought, you know, she was really my favorite character in TFA. But rewatching it this time around, I really found that I connected to Finn more. And it just kind of filled me with a great well of sadness because the Finn of TFA has such wonderful potential and sorry
I just agree with you and I feel okay about it.
For listeners, I'm a little off right now because I've been awake for 36 hours, so
I think I scared Grace by having
you definitely did. She definitely just jumped out of her seat.
I apologize.
I thought you were.
I thought like a bug was like crawling across your skin or something.
It just makes me angry to think about what happens in later movies. Yes.
So anyway, to finish a thought, while also concurring with Haley's scream of anguish, it's just really disappointing to see how many threads there were to pull on, and how both Last Jedi and I think even more so, and that's really saying something, Rise of Skywalker just did not do his character justice in any way, nor did they touch upon so many of the hints that were laid down in Force Awakens.
I will just say on that note, before we get into a deeper discussion of the sequel trilogies, which I'm sure we'll have more episodes about this, one thing that I really, like, I would not have taken issue with, you know, several different decisions they could have made here, but in The Force Awakens, there are so many indications that Finn is, like, romantically interested in Rey, and their relationship is just, like, very sweet and pure, and it just, like, no more attention goes to that in the rest of the sequels, and that just bothers me so much.
All right, can we let's talk about that for a second, because
It's like Disney was terrified to make any decision about romantic, like, can you think of one relationship that progressed beyond, like, sort of hinting at interest in the sequels? Because I mean there was the kiss, the Kylo Ray kiss.
Look, that kiss is banned from this podcast.
It's against the law.
That kiss is canceled. But yes, no. I mean, you're absolutely right. You're 100% right, Haley. I remember I remember thinking that when I first watched the movie, but then this time, obviously, which is, I think, the first time I've seen it since Rise of Skywalker. So it's one of those things where the movie is great, which only makes it more disappointing to watch, because you know that it doesn't get paid off. And there's all these moments. I mean, I was just writing all these notes down, but, like, as soon as, you know, Finn and Han and Chewie, you know, come and find Rey, and she, you know, Chewie's, like, you know, tells her that it was Finn's idea to go back for her, and they have this hug, and it's just a sweet moment.
It's so pure.
But even, like, also before that, like, when they're at Maz's castle, there's the whole thing where Finn tries to basically run away, and Rey's like, please don't do this, and he explains that he was lying to her, and he literally says, like, you looked at me like no one else ever had. I mean, I'm sorry, but you don't put that line.
Romantic stuff.
Yeah, you do not script that dialogue if you don't at least want to drop a marker for something later. You just don't. You don't do it. I mean, it just doesn't happen. So I don't know. I understand that there is a lot of Finn Poe shippers out there, which is totally great. I think there's an extremely valid case for that one as well. But the number of moments in this movie where it's like,
they set it up so perfectly. What bothers me so much.
And that's the thing, is that they obviously, as we're going to talk about here, they didn't plan out the whole trilogy. But what I was going to say is, no movie that was part of a grand plan would do this if they were not going to have a relationship. Right. And so that's how you know that they don't have a plan, is because this is not the kind of thing you do in Act One if you know, in Act Three that it isn't going to get paid off. And I don't know. There's just something so, frankly, just sweet about the two of them as people who are not wrapped up in this broader conflict at first. And for all we know, in this movie, they don't have any connection to the big names of the story, which that's another thing we can talk about. But, you know, one of them has run away from everything and the other just really wants to get back to everything, which confuses the other characters. And they make such a great pair. I'm basically rambling at this point, right? But they're just, it was a huge missed opportunity.
I'm glad we agree on this.
Yeah, I think just that it was a really big missed opportunity, and that their relationship was handled poorly in both successive movies. And I think as a bit of a casualty to that too, this is slightly off topic, but the character of Rose, who sort of seemed like a pseudo love interest of Finn's in The Last Jedi, which I think Rose is an amazing character, except for being kind of turned into a love interest, which is super annoying. But then in Rise of Skywalker, Rose was totally sidelined, and any of that hint of romantic tension was, again, just totally, to use a 2000s term, friend-zoned. And it was just kind of annoying to be like,
it's so
they did
weird.
This to poor Finn twice.
Yeah, they there was no commitment.
they just didn't care about his character enough to follow through on either one of the threads.
It's just really weird to me that there was, like, no romance that they committed to in any of those movies. Like there's that one spontaneous kiss, and there's, like, a few hints, but there's, like, there's nothing that actually they follow up on.
I mean, at the end of the movie, when Finn is unconscious, she kisses him on the forehead, which is not... I'll speak for myself. I've never done that to a friend. So
oh, you're missing out.
It seems a little tender for
it
for
was
people,
so tender.
You know, yeah. I don't know.
Well, I'm a very kissy person with my close friends, not like with strangers, obviously. Hopefully, obviously. So I think
for Grace, kissing, that's just a normal
yes,
day.
For, kissing can be, you know, a tender act of friendship. But that being said, in the context of that scene, it was very clearly romantic.
Although it is funny because right at the end of that scene, she calls him my friend, which, like,
that's true,
which is so funny. It was like, so you got friend zoned. It's like TFW, she kisses you on the forehead and then calls you my friend.
You know, I think part of it, even if they had taken the time to explore that relationship more, and like if Rey had been like, no, I want to, like, be more like of a Jedi and not, you know, have these romantic entanglements, like if they had actually addressed it in some substantial way, I wouldn't be as bothered by it. But they just sort of ignored it, you know.
And I do think we would be remiss in this discussion without pointing out that there was a lot of backlash around the casting of Finn in the first place, and having a black guy be such a major character in a Star Wars franchise, and the idea of a biracial romance. I think they really screwed up, and they got scared, and they let the racist fanboys kind of guide them on that one, because it was, they didn't want to take the more controversial route, even though it shouldn't seem controversial. And I think, again, recurring to an earlier point, that's also why Rose was sidelined in Rise of Skywalker, is because of the influence, the undue influence of the aforementioned racist fanboys. So I think that we couldn't have this discussion without pointing out that, you know, this is a very obvious opportunity for a biracial couple to be shown on screen that fizzled out in a way that I wonder if it would have happened if both characters were white or of the same race.
Yeah, and it's weird because they took other opportunities to try to celebrate and pat themselves on the back for the fact that they had cast a black man in this role. I mean, I remember the very first teaser trailer, which, like, basically broke the internet for an entire day, was the very first thing you see after the, you know, the camera, you know, comes up from black, is John Boyega standing up in, you know, on Jakku in the stormtrooper armor and sort of looking around, and they cut away, and it's like, that is the first new Star Wars that anybody had seen in, I guess, 10 years at that point. And so they really were trying to say, like, this is a new Star Wars, but I think it was pretty clear that they recognized that in their minds they could only go so far.
And that was a big mistake, I think.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Poe a little bit. I do want to come back to Rey, because obviously there's a lot to say about Rey, but I love Poe. I it's hard to watch this movie after watching The Last Jedi, which polarized a lot of people about him, but, like, he's so perfect in this movie as just the kind of the corny sort of swashbuckler with the heart. And obviously, you know, can't say enough about how well Oscar Isaac plays him. I mean, he has so many great moments in this movie. He really brings the humor in mm-hmm. He's got that kind of Han Solo charm, that, and he sort of brings that humor to the sequel trilogy in a lot of ways. And I think he's such an interesting character, and he, frankly, he gets off to a really good start in this movie in terms of, like, character development. Like, you can really tell right away who he is, and I thought he was handled really well in this film.
Definitely. And I will say one of the best scenes in the movie, and I think it's very uncontroversial, is when he and Finn escape. I think the rapport they establish, and, you know, where Poe has this moment where he sort of gives Finn his name. Like, that's just a very special scene, and he just pulled it off very well.
It's incredible how much character development and sort of scene setting they do in those moments where they first meet each other. I mean, I love the exchange where, you know, Finn sort of pulls, you know, Poe into the hallway, and he's like, you know, I'm going to get you out of here. And Poe's like, why are you helping me? And he says, because it's the right thing to do. And then there's that beat, right? And then there's that pause. And he says, you need a pilot. And he goes, I need a pilot.
Yep.
And it instantly tells you exactly who these two people are. Right. Poe has so many great lines. I remember watching The Force Awakens for the first time. And when the stormtroopers bring him over to Kylo, there's that pause. And it's this tense moment. It's classic, you know, gritty Star Wars drama. And then Poe goes, who talks first? You talk first? I talk first? And it was like, that was to me that first moment when I realized, oh, this is not like the 1970s Star Wars, and this is not the prequels. Like, this is very much a modern take on how to do pacing and all that stuff in a Star Wars movie. Like, there is some irreverence here, which I think is great.
Yeah.
I would say that I love Poe. Ginormous fan. And probably the reason he isn't my favorite is because he gets, like, so little screen time.
We don't
compared
see him
to
enough.
What he deserves. Yeah. I mean, we see him in the beginning, we see him in the end, but he's just gone for this whole middle section, and then just Deus Ex Machina turns up at the end again.
Was there any explanation? Oh, he got thrown from the ship.
Yeah, he got thrown from the ship.
Yeah.
One more thing I will say, slightly tangentially, but, you know, I'm just rolling that tangent wave today, and you all are coming along with me. Is that I do like Finn Poe. I think in the context of the films themselves, that Finn and Rey were the obvious ship, if you will, and I think that they should have been the main ship of the trilogy. That said, there is no heterosexual explanation in my mind for Poe telling Finn to keep his jacket.
The jacket! Oh my god.
You. And then he bites his lip.
He does bite his lip. That absolutely happens.
He was just being a very affirming friend.
Uh-huh. But one thing that I truly do appreciate about Oscar Isaac, beautiful, beautiful man that he is that he really supported Finn Poe rights. And he would repeatedly say during interviews that he was playing it like a love story, and that if Disney would let him, he would have made it more explicit, but he was just playing it as a love story in his mind. And I respect that heck out of you, Oscar Isaac, for doing that. You did that for us, the gay community, and I appreciate it.
No,
sorry,
it's great.
That's my tangent. I'm done.
No, that's great. And I'm also glad, and that's another thing that we haven't really talked about yet, but the cast members, the new cast themselves, were just wonderful, you know, a breath of fresh air, really, in terms of coming in, you know, much like sort of the characters themselves, they had grown up in a time where Star Wars was Star Wars, as opposed to just some weird thing that George Lucas is doing, or as opposed to like, oh, they're bringing back Star Wars, I don't necessarily know how this is going to go. Like, it was almost like there's like a post-historical tinge to like this third trilogy, where it's like we had seen the first thing, and then we had seen the attempt to bring it back, and so now it's like, well, we've been through all that, and they had, you know, they had grown up in a world where this was the big thing. And even though I don't think Daisy Ridley actually really knew much about Star Wars, but she was extremely enthusiastic once she got on board and was a great ambassador for the story. And then, of course, you know, John was, it was his energy was infectious. I mean, I remember there's a behind the scenes video where he's on set and he's getting Harrison Ford to sign a Stormtrooper action figure. And he's like hyperventilating as he's standing there next to Harrison Ford. And to me, that's the kind of energy that is so fun to see from these people who are bringing the characters to life. You could certainly do a good job if you don't have that kind of love for it. I mean, you know, Harrison Ford. But but in a time when the actors being out there in public and on social media is so much a part of the draw, they they were great, and just seeing this movie again reminded me how lucky we were to have them for the time that we had them for.
Yeah, they were awesome. And it makes me sad too that by the end of the sequel trilogy, that the actors themselves seemed a bit disillusioned and saddened with the way that it had gone. Because clearly they had so much hope for and love for their characters. So that is a bit of a bummer. And I think all of them deserved so much better than the racist attacks that John Boyega and Oscar Isaac received and the sexist attacks that Daisy Ridley has received. But, I mean, all things considered, they were a really great trio. And I hope to see more of all of them in future movies.
Yeah, absolutely right. I will totally second. I mean, you know, basically Daisy Ridley being driven off of social media was a real low point, you know, for this fandom. You know, there was so much promise and potential in this new era. We were excited about these new characters and these new movies and these new actors. And then, you know, a bunch of people just kind of ruined it for everybody and basically hounded these people until it wasn't fun for them anymore to be engaging with the public in that way. And that's just really sad.
Yeah. And I think there's two, like, not beyond also that, I think John Boyega has been most outspoken about it, but they also were very disillusioned by, you know, how the studio handled it and, like, the writing in the later movies and things that they, you know, took issue with. And so it's sort of like a double-sided, you know, not just were people angry at them for existing and being cast in these roles, but it was also you're contending with the studio and you're upset about, you know, these decisions, and you're also hearing from the audience that's upset about some of those decisions. And I think, you know, that just seems like a lot.
Yeah. Let's talk about another major new character who is also, you know, connected to this broader discussion about how well were things paid off. Kylo Ren, Adam Driver in Star Wars. He obviously knocked it out of the park. One of the things that I really was surprised about this movie when I sort of watched it again for the first time, again in a long time, he doesn't take off his helmet for most of the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes a while. And I just, part of me was stunned to realize that, you know, for so long, we didn't know what he was going to look like under there. And I mean, for so long in the movie, we had no idea what he looked like.
I like when he finally takes it off and his hair is, like, perfectly wavy and has been clearly
pretty
styled.
Boy.
Yeah, well, because that's how the Force works. So
yes.
I mean, we'll end up talking about the Reylo stuff, the relationship itself, you know, later on, I'm sure. But, like, in this movie, my big sort of takeaway for him wasn't necessarily the connection with Rey, because they only start to hint at it here. It was more, I had a much better appreciation for how sort of broken he was as a person.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie is really interesting to watch after you've seen what happens next, because, you know, you can see, well, let's talk about, like, how conflicted did you two interpret him to be in this movie? Because the scene
he's constantly slicing up the walls of the ship that he's, like, he has issues. And I think, you know, beyond struggling with just, like, daily life and getting very frustrated by things, you know, he does have these conversations, like, with Darth Vader's helmet and skull, where he's like, oh, you know, I feel the pull to the light, and, like,
right,
you know, I'm struggling to know who I am and what I should be doing. And I think that's a main part of his character in this film.
I think
also just, like, whiny and emotional sometimes.
Yeah. And as we know, I have been a supporter of whiny and emotional male protagonists in the past.
Who isn't struggling?
Of a supporter as Padme Amidala is. She's the ultimate supporter.
She truly is. But I mean, I think Adam Driver he's an incredible actor. I've really liked him in a lot of other movies. I think that much like all the other actors, given the inconsistencies he had to work with over the course of three movies, I think he did a really good job. But that said, I never got into his character. I'm sorry. I just
well, okay,
I don't care. Okay, so I have a few problems, which I shall try to make very small, condense. And just a big one doesn't even have to do so much with him, but just for my problem with the sequel series in general, which is that I don't see why it has to exist, basically. And part of that is Anakin's story and how it comes to this conclusion in Return of the Jedi. And then 20 years later, it's like, okay, but everything is the same again. They have a new empire. They have a new Death Star. They have a new Darth Vader. And new Darth Vader is looking at the old Darth Vader like, hey, Grandpa, give me some murder advice. And meanwhile, Force Ghost Anakin is probably in the ether like, hey,
start with
stop.
The same people. I highly recommend it. They're easy targets.
No, we're talking about redeemed Force Ghost.
Oh, that's
Anakin.
Right. That's right.
Because he was redeemed. And I just feel like this, I mean, now I'm getting into a very Hoff take, but I feel like that this movie doesn't, as good as it is and as much as I enjoy it, it doesn't necessarily justify its existence for me. And Kylo, for me, is just emblematic of the problem that I have with it overall, which is that it feels like it's just trying to capture the lightning in a bottle of A New Hope, but under different packaging. So
I don't, yeah. Grace, you sound more down on this film than Eric and I.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say, I think one thing that Kylo suffers from is they don't do a great job of sort of the whole characterization of him being Han and Leia's son, who is then sent away for training and then left vulnerable and then corrupted and then runs away. And I get it. There's not a lot of time to do all this stuff. But I think if you felt a little bit more of the pathos that they were trying to put into his character there, I suspect he would be more than just a new Darth Vader in the way that Starkiller Base is pretty obviously, well, I'll take back obviously because I don't think anybody's challenging that it's obvious, but it's pretty there's nothing nuanced or complicated. It is just another Death Star, right? Like, there's no like other element to that that is like, oh, but it's more than just another Death Star. Whereas I think Kylo being, you know, having that past in a way that Anakin never did, he had different trauma, but I think Kylo's trauma makes him more than just a new Darth Vader, but they didn't pay it off. It's something where you sort of have to force yourself to think about it and to appreciate it by sort of reading the Wikipedia article and like reading the Marvel comic series where you actually see him become Kylo Ren. And that's not, you know, it doesn't work when you're just watching the movie. So you don't feel it. But I think if you did feel it, I think that would change him a lot.
I'm sorry, I have to, I keep hijacking this. I just have one teeny tiny point, which is not that teeny tiny, sorry. I think that's actually the problem for me, for all of the sequel characters, is that they're all such good characters on the surface. And once you flesh them out with those emotional backgrounds, you really get to feel for them. But in the movie, I mean, they're basically just archetypes. Rey, as much as I love her, she's a mysterious scavenger who doesn't know about her parents. And Finn was raised as a stormtrooper, but do they go into that at all? No. Like, and then his past as a stormtrooper really isn't touched upon again in a meaningful way, even when he meets with other stormtrooper rebels. Like, his experience as a stormtrooper and how that affected him isn't, like, it just isn't developed to the way that it could have been. And Poe, all we know about Poe is that he's just some hotshot pilot. Like, oh yay, another one of those in the Star Wars universe.
I will say, to defend the Force, it is the first movie in a series. It's only 2 hours long. And I think these characters do get a lot of development. Well, maybe not Poe, because he only shows up at the end after, you know, the first opening. But I think Rey gets a lot of development, first of all, just in trying to find her stride and, you know, deciding to give up on waiting for her parents to come back. And you know, sort of seeing beyond her planet. And I will say, maybe they don't reckon with it in a very substantial way, but Finn is, you know, struggling with his past when he's, you know, he lies to Rey about where he's from. I'm part of the Resistance, you know. And he's constantly sort of dropping hints like, oh, if you fly close to the ground, like the TIE fighters won't pick you up. Like he knows things about the First Order that other people wouldn't know. And you sort of see hints of that, and you see his relationship with Phasma, and at the end where he sort of takes out his anger and rage when he has her, you know, sort of hostage. You see part of that, but there's also this moment on near Maz Kanata's palace. Which, first of all, I love that setting. But when he is fighting the stormtroopers, and, you know, he has this sort of showdown with the lightsaber and the stormtrooper who iconically says, traitor, and starts to fight him. So, I mean, they reckon with it some, but it's like, how much time can you put into that in, you know, the first installment of a film?
Yeah, I would also say, I mean, I don't think Luke and Han were any more fleshed out in A New Hope. I mean, Han was,
right,
like, literally the two-dimensional, you know, rogue with a heart of gold. And I don't know that anybody was really saying these kinds of things about him back then.
that's not really... My argument is that, oh, compared to Han Solo, that wonderful, complex 3D character that we all know and
but
love.
But I guess my point is, like, I don't necessarily know that it's a problem if they're that way. Like, I think that, you know, first of all, it is the first of three. Second of all, Star Wars has never suffered, really, because its characters were Star Wars characters, fairy tale, you know, Buck Rogers characters, as opposed to, you know, Game of Thrones, you know, The Wire characters. I don't necessarily know that that has ever held Star Wars back.
So this, I will just, I see your guys' points, but my one thing that I will push back upon and why I think it bothers me is because I wouldn't care as much about that level of character development if the plot wasn't so beat for beat similar,
yes,
to A New Hope. Because watching it, I mean, like, I had forgotten how similar, especially the beginning, is to A New Hope. But that, I mean, so many similarities, not to mention all of the times that they lean on the nostalgia factor, like the Chewie, we're home, and Han and Leia reuniting, which is very sweet, even though they should have kissed, but I digress. I think that they lean too much on nostalgia, and that if they had actually done something new with these super cool characters that they had just developed, instead of making the new trilogy about what had already occurred, like, I think there's a way to do an homage to the original without replicating it. And we have seen that in The Mandalorian. But yeah, it doesn't convince me in the way that it seems to have convinced you two. And that doesn't mean that I don't love the characters, because I think they're great. But it just, I wish there was more. That's
my hot take.
Argument.
I will say my hot take about this complaint about it being like A New Hope is that I think it strikes the right balance. And I mean, have you guys watched A New Hope recently?
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's a great iconic movie.
Oh wow! So I just burned my hand on that take.
People who say A New Hope is exactly like The Force Awakens, just, that does not make sense to me. Yes, there is another Death Star, but it, like, every Star Wars, like, the whole original, the sixth one also had a Death Star. Like, I don't, anyway, there are things that are counterintuitive in The Force Awakens. Like, you get Han Solo and Leia are, like, separated, and they've had this terrible, you wouldn't want that to happen. And it's clearly not specifically to please the fan base. Han Solo dies. It's not like Han is going to get to continue to be one of the most beloved characters in the next couple of films, because he dies. Secondly, I will say, we literally watched the New Republic get destroyed with, like, nobody knows that it's going to happen or stops it. You could compare that to Alderaan, but it's also just like the scale of it is insane. And one thing that I don't like about The Force Awakens is I wish they had like spent more time on that. Because you don't know anything about the New Republic and you don't really recognize like the mass carnage that happened in that moment. And I wish there was more time in the movie that was dedicated to sort of grappling with what happened and, you know, the tragedy that they sort of portrayed in a 2-minute time span.
You are 100% right about that. I mean, I cannot agree with you more, Haley. I had that in my notes. The New Republic getting destroyed was mind-blowing to watch.
It's crazy. It's boggling.
It's unbelievable to me. And also very disappointingly handled in the sense that they don't make you feel for it, really. Like, coming back later, having read the books about the New Republic and knowing that there was, deleted scenes where Leia sends this agent to Hosnian Prime to try to get help, like, I feel a lot more now watching it than I did then. It was shocking back then, but now it's shocking and sad. And they don't make you really feel it, as you said, in the moment.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I have to interrupt extremely quickly to say that I do not actually think A New Hope is terrible. That was a joke.
Okay.
You're canceled, Grace. It's too late.
People are going to come after me. So I just had to really clarify that was a joke.
The title of this episode is going to be Grace Hates A New Hope. We've decided. I will say, I do agree with you more than with you, Grace, more than Haley on how much this is a carbon copy of A New Hope, especially like I was watching, there's the scene where Han, takes back the Falcon and they're like, we need your help. We need to get this droid to the Resistance. And it's like, well, that sounds really familiar. Almost like it was lifted word for word and just, the rebellion was changed to the Resistance. Like, there's a lot of stuff like that. Obviously the trench, they literally have a trench run, like, which again, they didn't need to have a trench run to get into the thermal oscillator. They could have had any other way of getting in there, but they love trench runs, so they're gonna do a trench run. That being said, this movie is so hard to hate. Like, it's so hard.
It's so fun.
It's so hard to be down on it for being a carbon copy of A New Hope, because while you're watching it, yes, you have moments where you realize that it's a carbon copy of A New Hope, but it's just so fun. It's so light and fast and funny, and it's just, you can't be mad at The Force Awakens.
No, and I'm not. And I would say, in an argument that I have put against myself, is it really so bad to have A New Hope redone with a more diverse cast that's more relatable to a broader range of people? No,
right.
I don't think so. So I'm not, if there is one takeaway from me, it's not that I hate The Force Awakens or, think it's a bad movie, because I think it's a really fun movie. It's an entertaining one, but it just doesn't, it's not in my top five. If you will.
Can we briefly talk about Hux? We have so much. There's so many places we could go in this conversation. We obviously need to have a 2-hour follow-up episode.
But
Hux, I can't with Hux. I just can't.
I think he's fun.
He's great. He's obviously wonderful. Donald Gleason does such a fantastic job. He's like, basically, if Tarkin was on Adderall.
And deeply, deeply insecure.
Deeply insecure, yeah. Exactly. Like, just the looks that he gives Ren, just the speech when they blow up Hosnian Prime, he's basically spitting. It's just, he's so good in this movie. It's honestly unbelievable how underrated he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. In all three movies, he takes a 2-minute role and makes it one of the best parts of each movie. Just excellent in each one, and in this one he really shines.
All right, let me do we're going sort of lightning round here, but Hoth take here. Phasma, boring as hell, sucks.
She is great. Very boring. I think the purpose of Phasma watching it again was just to give Finn that scene where he grapples with his past and his anger over how he was abused as a stormtrooper. She just represents the Empire to him.
Yes.
Because she was his immediate boss. But, especially in the later movies, it's what was the point of that character?
I think this is, again, kind of how Gwendolyn Christie, who is the actress who played Phasma, was kind of done wrong by this movie, because she could have been this cool badass villain. And, you know, as we've talked about, there's not a ton of time to develop characters, yada, yada. But the way she was hyped up in promos as like this real foil, and then you see her in TFA and TLJ and you're like, really? That's it? That was nothing. That was pretty boring.
Can I just say, I would like to discuss, before we run out of time, some of the most, my favorite things about The Force Awakens. I love, like, the places and the effects. Like, I think Jakku and, you know, seeing where Rey lives and where she's, like, scavenging and...
Oh my god, can we talk about her introductory, the whole introductory montage of Rey?
Oh, it's so beautiful.
It's perfect. So it is down to every single microsecond. Sliding down the dune, you hear the music start. You don't know where she is.
Her
you
theme
see the,
is so
the
good.
Engine behind her, and then it pulls back, and you realize, oh, that's a Star Destroyer, like, for
it's
scale.
So
like, yes. her music is the best music in the sequel trilogy. There's no argument about that. The world building for her, the exposition. I literally am like, I'm losing it thinking about this, because you obviously have the instant bread, which is incredible. You have the tally marks on the wall.
I want to eat that bread so much. Just a moment.
Yes.
The bread. Whenever I think about the space bread, I have to go like rewatch that scene where she makes the space bread. I wish we had gotten to see in the movie her eating the space bread. I think it just cuts and the bread is gone. But it looks so tasty. And it's one of those like practical scenes where it's, I think I watched behind the scenes of how they like pushed up a real bread through the juice to make it look like it had, you know, sort of puffed into existence. Like those little things I just loved.
Why do we have Bitcoin but not instant space bread?
Yes,
that is like
one
my question.
Portion.
Yes, and can I just say, as long as we're talking about Rey eating, that next moment that you were talking about, where she's sitting outside in front of her AT-AT house and
with
she's
the helmet,
she,
with
so
the
she
helmet.
Eats and then she sort of finishes eating and she's still chewing and she puts the helmet on, and there's that, just the way that it's so hard to describe, but like that is some of the best acting I've ever seen. It is
it's just adorable.
Beautiful. Yeah, and that's the thing, is she is telling us exactly who Rey is. There's that sort of contented look on her face. She's wistful. She's thinking. She's somewhat sad about how, you know, she's living. But she's also, like, trying to think about a better future. And you get all that in that scene.
I think, in a way, it's kind of comparable to the iconic Luke in A New Hope looking at the twin sons scene, where you get so much of that character in just, you know, 10 seconds looking at their face, and you get that same sense of who Rey is and what's important to her and what she wants, and just, you know, in this tiny little moment of her eating.
And Daisy Ridley's facial expressions are incredible in the whole movie. I mean, there's a scene on Takodana, you know, where Han has said, you know, I'd like you to join the crew. And she's like, I can't. And he's like, it's too bad. Chewie really likes you. And he walks away and she sort of is looking at him and the sun is hitting her face in this way. And she sort of crinkles her nose. And it's like, there's so much. It's just so expressive. Like, I just don't know how else to describe it. It's one of the most wonderful things about her as an actor, that she can tell you, you know, exactly what Rey is thinking in that moment. So shout out to Daisy Ridley.
And I will, while we're talking about Jakku, before we move on, there's this scene that I have so much appreciate, like, beyond just like the practical effects of, you know, there was this cool little bird that you see at one point just like you know, smacking its head against some metal, but like beyond that, there's in this, you know, firefight, and they're chasing down Rey and Finn, and there's this TIE fighter that gets destroyed and is crashing, and you see sort of near the edge of the screen three or four scavengers who live for this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they're already running to go pick
instantly
up the pieces.
Yeah.
Like, they're there. They're like, I'm going to get some of that space bread.
That's the best day of their life, basically.
Right.
Let's talk about Takodana. I want to just start by saying one of my favorite moments is actually at the end, after everything. We'll talk about the Force flashback, but for me, one of the best moments in the movie is when the stormtroopers are rounding up the heroes and you think all is lost. And then they say, you know, we've got, you know, incoming, you know, enemies. And you sort of see off in the distance over the lake, there's these shapes, you know, that are throwing up water. And there's got these sort of vapor trails behind them. And I think it's Han who says, it's the resistance. And instantly, you know, the resistance march cuts in and you see the X-Wings come in. You see that Poe's alive. Poe has this incredible montage of taking out like eight TIE fighters at once, this beautiful tracking shot of all of it. That is like one of the most like beautiful, like your makes your heart swell moments, because it's the first time where you really see who is the resistance, who are these people, what do they look like, how do they fly, and it was a great rescue scene.
Yeah, I love that whole setting at Maz Kanata's palace and Taco Donna. I think that is just, and you know, for Rey, she's seeing it for the first time. She says something like, you know, I didn't know there was this much green in the whole universe.
Yes.
And it's just a very striking change from, you know, being on that desert planet to going there and seeing, you know, how other people live. And I also, Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote the song,
Cantina song,
the Cantina music, yeah, for this one, which I love. I think it's very fresh. but also, you know, recalls the old Cantina music. So, but I also just think it's cool how in that scene, they sort of confront, different challenges that they're facing. So like Rey is confronting, you know, she left home and am I going to go back? And what does the future look like? And, you know, Finn is having this internal crisis about, should I, you know, run away from the First Order? You know, what does that look like? And, you know, of course, he lied to Rey, and so he's also struggling with that. And I think the way that Han sort of factors into all of that, just helping both of them try to work through those things is just really special. I liked that.
I think something that is true of all three movies in the sequel series, even Rise of Skywalker, which I have a lot of problems with, but especially TFA and TLJ, is that the visuals are just stunning. There are just so many creative scenes, planets, ways of showing new geography, just ways of demonstrating how the galaxy works. And I think that there are some really gorgeous world-building shots in TFA.
I mean, the first shot in the whole movie, you see the planet and
get sort of overshadowed.
You know, and then, yes, so the first Star Wars, you know, first scene of every Star Wars movie is supposed to be a spaceship. And here you have, well, you see Jakku and you wonder where the spaceship is. And then all of a sudden, the planet starts to get covered by darkness. And that is how they introduce the spaceship. And right. Then they cut to the troop shuttle with the lighting kind of flickering for the first few seconds.
Oh, that was so cool.
It's your first glimpse of the new stormtroopers. Everybody wants to know what they're going to look like. And the cinematography, just incredible in this movie.
Yeah, and one thing, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but you know, it starts with this shot of the planet and you're like, look at this, like that's beautiful. And you sort of see this new Empire derivative like overshadow it in darkness. And yeah. I think, you know, it's just sort of trying to tell you the story, like even if we don't know the details of how the First Order, you know, came to be, like clearly there is evil in the galaxy again, that is, you know, putting its foot on the neck of the people. And it somehow tells that story in like the first few seconds. And I think it was really well done.
Can I jump quickly to a character that we forgot to bring up, who's really just a wonderful character? BB-8, folks.
Yes!
Can we talk about BB-8 for a minute? I mean, he's such a precious small boy.
He is so sweet. And I love Poe's Poe recognizes how precious and small,
yes, absolutely,
and good he is.
I mean, he has the characterization. If you told somebody like 10 years ago that this character would be that lovable and that human, they would never believe you if you describe what he looks like. And yeah, it's just such a testament to ILM and the filmmakers that they were able to, I mean, just the expressiveness of the head tilting in various directions. He can look sad. He can do a thumbs up, which was just like hilarious when everybody
like
first saw that.
I like that you interpreted it as a thumbs up.
Oh, some people think it's a middle finger, right? So I prefer to think of it as a thumbs up because he is a precious small boy and, you know, he's a good boy. But I love him. Like, I'm an R2-D2 stan. Everybody knows this. He was done dirty in this movie. Let's not even get started on that. J.J. Abrams hates him for some reason I don't understand. Rian Johnson gave him the only good moment he ever had, which is just criminal. But, like, why was he frozen in time? Anyway, it's fine. But
I think
BB-8...
R2 was just very emotional that Luke was gone.
Okay, fine. But he woke up for no reason at the end of the movie when he could have woken up at any point and been like,
yeah,
oh yeah,
I mean,
I've got the rest of the map.
An explanation was in order for why he was suddenly back.
Yeah,
I don't know. But
BB-8, great. You know, they've got to bring a new droid into the story. It has to be different. It can't just be a new R2-D2. It was great. Honestly, like, the form factor is just so compelling. It's such a different thing. And his relationship with Rey, when she fixes his antenna and, like, when she's not sure if she wants to let him, like, stay with her overnight so that he's safe, and he does this little purring, kind of, like, moving back and forth thing. It's just perfect.
I think he's my second favorite droid in Star Wars.
Mm.
You know, Eric, a lot of cynical middle-aged men disagree with you and your earnest appreciation of BB-8.
Yeah, but who cares what cynical
droids,
middle-aged
droids
men
are think. Not supposed to be cute, they say. Why is he so round, they say.
What else do they say?
I don't know.
Well,
I
who
think
cares what
it.
They say?
Yes, I disagree.
I
with...
care what we say.
Yes. I disagree
well, we
with
have
them
the
as
podcast.
Well.
Yes, cynical middle-aged males and I don't tend to agree a lot about Star Wars. But let's see. We want to try to wrap up here with some quick reaction highlights. But do people want to shout out some of their favorite lines in this movie? Because the dialogue, the humor in this movie is incredible.
Tell that to Conja Club.
There yes, was, I was going to say like, tell that to Kanji Club.
It was a meme on Twitter, on Star
meme.
Wars Twitter for like
I
a whole
it.
Year.
It was so good.
It made no sense and I loved that meme to pieces and it brought me such joy to hear it in the real movie.
Another one is, of course, Ankar Plutt and whenever he's giving portions, one quarter portion. Like that's just iconic.
How about that's not how the Force works?
Yeah. There's also this one moment where there's like an Empire underling who's sort of telling Kylo what happened on
I was
Jakku.
Just gonna say this one
and,
go ahead.
And he said something like the droid is on a freighter and he's escaped, and Kylo turns around and says the droid stole a freighter,
so
and
good.
it's like he's not trying to be funny, but it's like pretty hilarious that
yes.
this is yeah. what he thinks happened.
Another great one is when they're on the Falcon and Finn is trying to understand why Rey wants to go back to Jakku, and he says, "You got family? You got a boyfriend? Cute boyfriend?
Cute boyfriend?
Yes, it's so good."
Then
well,
when
how we
on...
all said that in unison.
Yeah, well, we all knew where we were going. And then when she saves him from the Rathtar, oh, we didn't even talk about the Rathtars, which is good because that was the dumbest part of the movie. But when she saves him, he's like explaining, he's like, the door. And she goes, that was lucky. And then they just kind of like run away. It's very like Luke Han Leia energy in that scene.
Yeah.
Oh my God. There's so many. I'm literally reading through my notes, but, I liked also, when, right after Han says, that's not how the Force works, Chewie says something and Han turns to Chewie and goes, oh really? You're cold.
Oh yes. That's so yeah. good.
And then when Finn encounters Phasma and he keeps saying, I'm in charge now. And Han's like, yeah. bring it down.
That's I loved, one. I will say I loved the Han and Finn relationship. Like
yes.
Han saw who Finn was and it was
instantly.
Very instantly. Yeah. And he was compassionate about it, but also hilarious.
That was
and,
another great moment where he goes, you got another problem. Women always find out the truth.
Right. Yes.
So good. Favorite moments as we wrap up here. I feel like we could go on for hours. I know this. I mean, I'm looking at my notes and we almost talked about like 5% of these things, but favorite moments in the movie.
Rey, lightsaber.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so you said it for me, but yes, obviously the best moment in for it is for me,
chills.
It is my favorite moment in all of Star Wars. No question. I got chills every time I watched it.
This
I
is
got
a
chills.
Hot take, Eric.
It's an incredibly hot take, but I will defend this to the death. It is my favorite moment. I got chills watching today. Just again, this goes back to Daisy Ridley, but when she catches it, and obviously the music comes up, and John Williams just freaking like getting that 100 millionth Oscar. But like, there's you can see on her face like she's scared. She's uncertain, but she's determined. She knows she has to do this. She doesn't want to do this. She just got through saying she never wanted to hold that lightsaber again, but she knows she has to do this, and she's going to protect her friend, and she's going to try to take down this monster, and you get all of that on her face, and it's just, I don't know, just the lead up where Kylo thinks, okay, I'm entitled to this lightsaber. This is my family's lightsaber. And then, nope, it goes right past you. It almost hits you in the head. It's her lightsaber. And again, we can get into this later, but the meta aspect of, this is not all about family and who your parents were and who your grandparents were. This is about what the Force wants. And she is the one who is entitled to wield this weapon because she deserves the weapon. She's pure of heart. She's basically the Force's choice, and she's not connected to this bigger story. She's a newcomer. LOL. Again, I'm obviously being deliberate here, but, like, you know, that is that's the power of that scene for me, is that she is a nobody, but that doesn't mean she doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, it would have been super nice if they had actually followed through with those ideas, but I just remember seeing it on opening night in the movie theater and just crying. And it just, I mean, this is going to sound so cheesy, but how it felt for me to see a girl, like, pull the lightsaber and have it go to her and then have her be the one to own it and to wield it and to be the Jedi, you know, because obviously they're female Jedi in books and in comics and in TV shows and so many wonderful female Jedi characters, but never really before in a major Star Wars movie. And that was the first time in a movie where we had that moment. And I just still think it's incredibly powerful.
One of, this is unrelated, well, sort of related, but a different moment that was definitely not as impactful, but I liked it because of what I wanted to happen in the sequel trilogy. She's on the ship and she's trying to escape after, you know, Kylo has tried to interrogate her and he's left. And, you know, there's this one stormtrooper in there who I believe is Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know how she knew how to do this. And, you know, the explanation would just be the Force, but she tries to do, you know, use the Force voice and tells him what to do and to release her. And her acting in that scene is so good, but it's also, to me, when she finally does do it the right way, I think it took like 3 tries or something, like, it's very reminiscent of Obi-Wan and, like, how he was when he did that. And I so wanted her to be related to him somehow because he's, like, the best. And, you know, they both have British accents. They both spend a lot of time on desert planets. And that, like, that scene sort of hinted at that to me. And he also was very prominent in the scene where she's, you know, at Maz Kanata's palace. And you hear his voice twice, I think, talking to her.
Yeah.
And I believe it's been reported that Disney thought about, you know, some sort of, you know, family relationship there. And they just sort of changed their minds.
And they were like, no, we've actually got a better idea. We've got one that will work better.
I wish they had done that, though. It would have been very good.
I also love that scene. Yeah. So that's our episode. We will probably find ways to talk about some of this stuff that we didn't get to in future episodes. I know I have a lot of notes that I didn't get to, but until next time, we're going to leave it there. Thank you so much for listening to our discussion of The Force Awakens. Obviously, we're going to keep going with the sequel trilogy and have more episodes on those topics. If you'd like to share your thoughts about this episode or suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter at hothtakes. I'm at Eric Geller on Twitter. Grace is Grace_Seegers, and Haley is at Burdenator. Haley made our incredible, really freakishly good logo and also our banner art. And I edited this week's episode. I also put together our music. And we should point out, for legal reasons so that we don't get sued, that all Star Wars themes and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. If you want to find past episodes, you can do that on our website. That's hothtakes.wordpress.com. If you like the show, we would love it if you would share it with a friend, family member, even enemy. If you really want to bother them, send it to one of your enemies. You can just tell them to subscribe on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, pretty much any of the major platforms. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.